ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 10, Text Number 17. Praninakshi patakshutre Antara jayate vibhu Pipasato jaksatascha Pranukha nirabhijyata. Anyone else? Okay. We'll do the word-for-word translation. Pranena.
Pranena.
By the living force.
By the living force.
Akshipata.
Akshipata.
Being agitated.
Being agitated.
Shut.
Shut.
Hunger.
Hunger.
Trit.
Trit.
Thirst.
Thirst.
Antara.
Antara.
From within.
From within.
Jayate.
Jayate.
Generates.
Generates.
Vibhu.
Vibhu.
Of the Supreme.
Of the Supreme.
Vipassata.
Vipassata.
Being desirous to quench the thirst.
Being desirous to quench the thirst.
Jakshata.
Jakshata.
Being desirous to eat.
Being desirous to eat.
Cha.
Cha.
And.
And.
Prag.
Prag.
At first.
At first.
Mukham.
Mukham.
The mouth.
Mouth.
Nirabhijyata.
Nirabhijyata.
Was open.
Was open.
Translation. And purport by His Divine Grace. Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Yeah.
The living force, being agitated by the Virat Purusha, generated hunger and thirst, and when he desired to drink and eat, the mouth opened. Translation responsibly. The living force,
living force,
being agitated by the Virat Purusha,
being agitated by the Virat Purusha,
generated hunger and thirst,
generated hunger and thirst,
and when he desired to drink and eat,
and when he desired to drink,
the mouth opened.
The mouth opened.
The process by which all living beings in the womb of the mother develop their sense organs and sense perceptions appears to follow the same principles in the case of the Virat Purusha, the sum total of all living entities. Therefore, the supreme cause of all generation is not impersonal or without desire. The desires for all kinds of sense perception and sense organs exist in the Supreme, and thus they take place in the individual persons. This desire is the nature of the Supreme Living Being, the Absolute Truth. Because He has the sum total of all mouths, the individual living entities have mouths. Similarly, with all other senses and sense organs. Here, the mouth is the symbolic representation of all sense organs, for the same principles apply to the others also. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurmilitam Yena Tasma Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gadamalam Patati Swapalantikam Mukham karoti vachalam pangum langayate girim yakripata maham vande shi gurun dinatarinam vancha kalpa trivyascha kripa sindubhya eva cha patitanam bhavnevyo vaishnavevyo namo namaha jai shi krishna chaitanya prabhu nityananda shri advaita gadadhar shivasari gaur bhaktavinda hare krishna 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 hare 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 Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Okay. So in this purport, Srila Prabhupada is giving a wonderful example, of course, a materialistic example for us to understand how this Virat Purusha is working and influencing are the conditioned soul, the conditioned souls. So he's speaking about how in the womb of the mother, the living beings, the fetus, they are developing their senses, their organs, their sense perceptions, while in the womb of the mother, the maintainer, in that sense, the provider. So similarly, the same principle in the case of the Virat Purusha is also used, and the Virat Purusha, explained to be the sum total of all living entities, also has senses, organs, desires. Similarly, its parts and parcels also have sense perceptions and sense desires. So the Supreme Absolute Truth, the Supreme Person, cannot be seen as something that is formless and that is desireless. The initial understanding, of course, of senses or sense perceptions has to directly lead to one's understanding that once there are sense organs, when there are senses, there must be a form associated with it. There has to be a personality associated with it. Therefore, in this very short purport, Srila Prabhupada explains that the Supreme Person also has desires and he also has senses, and that is why the living entities also have the same propensity or have the same understanding of being full of senses, perceptions, etc. So we might understand that the Supreme Lord, of course, is the cause of all causes, whether it's in its gross or subtle creation or maintenance or annihilation. Earlier on in the previous chapters, the cause of all causes, it is also nicely explained how the Supreme Lord creates, or the living entities who are parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord has similar qualities to the Lord, of course, in minute quantities. That is why the living entity is seen as a part and parcel or a tatastha energy of the Lord. We have similar qualities to Krishna. We have the same in terms of being independent, in terms of having desire, in terms of having a form. We have all these things, but of course in minute quantity. What the living entity has in terms of independence is this ability to independently think and independently desire. That belongs to the living entity because it is also there in the Supreme Absolute Person. However, with the living entity who is minute, who is very Anu, the Lord of course being Vibhu, full of potencies, the living entity can only exist by having independent thoughts, but all our actions are dependent on the mercy of the Supreme Lord, even when it comes to material creation, material maintenance, material sustenance, etc. So in all matters, Lord Brahma, in this most of the second canto, is explaining his subordinate position to the Supreme Lord, even in terms of him being the secondary creator. So from Bhagavad Gita, we understand that the living beings, of course, they are superior to dull matter. Matter in itself is inferior. The background of these two energies, however, the background of the external energy and the marginal potency is the Supreme Lord himself. He's the controller of both, and he's the maintainer and sustainer of both of these energies. They are all coming from him. Therefore, it is only fit to recognize the position of the Supreme Lord in terms of being the controller and the overall provider for the conditioned souls. So because the living entity wants to enjoy separately from Krishna, he wants to enjoy the so-called bliss of being independent or being separate from the Supreme Lord as an individual. The false ego is generated. It is difficult. It is not possible in the spiritual realm to actually try to enjoy separately from Krishna. That's why we have to have this covering of the false ego, because it is then and only then where we can actually get the impetus to try to enjoy separately from Krishna. When one is in pure union with Krishna, in our original constitutional position, there is no false ego, because one does not desire at that point to enjoy separately from Krishna and come down to try to run after the phantasmagoria of material existence. So, because Krishna, of course, doesn't tamper with the living entity's independence or the living entity's free will, when the living entity desires to enjoy the shadow elements that are, in essence, generated by the Supreme Lord in his Vishnu incarnations, both gross and subtle, all of these are provided by or generated by the will of the Lord, so that the living entity can exhaust their material desires. So even for the so-called perfection or enjoyment of our material desires, we require one of the energies of the Lord to cover us in terms of the avijja potency, creating the false ego concept of I am and this is mine. Different, whether it's individual, communal, or global, different coverings are created for the living entity. And this is the only way that the living entity can try to enjoy separately from Krishna. This only happens in material existence. But this independence should be understood in the right manner. Sometimes we hear questions about if we are if at all we are independent, then why do we choose to come here to this material world? Or if we were with Krishna, why do we decide to leave Krishna's presence, etc.? So many arguments or so many thought patterns can arise in our minds when we try to understand what it means to actually have the same independence that Krishna has. So for the living entity, for the minute part and parcel of Krishna, the very existence of the part and parcel of Krishna depends on his contact or connection with the Supreme Independent Person. So it is not possible for the spark to exist independently for eternity without being connected to the whole. It is not possible to remove the sunshine from the sun. The sunshine or the sun rays are eternally connected to the sun planet. It is not possible to think of the two independently. Although the sun globe has its position, and the sun rays travel and provide sunshine, etc., to different parts. However, the existence of the sun rays or the sunshine themselves is always permanently connected to the sun globe, the sun planet. Similarly, the living entity, although Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita very simply that these living entities are his fragmental parts and parcels, however, they struggle very hard with, of course, the material senses, which include the mind. So the mind also gets covered by different degrees of lust, different degrees of ignorance, so do the senses and the intelligence. So our independence actually lies in depending on Krishna. So we have independent thoughts, we have independent desires. Therefore, Krishna facilitates our desires. He facilitates us to grow towards him or continually get covered by the external energy, get covered by the mahatattva, the false ego, etc. And in that way, we develop all these impersonalistic understanding of the absolute truth. So the desires of all kinds of sense perceptions and sense organs, they exist in the Lord. But the Lord himself, of course, his form is never contaminated by the modes of material nature. The conditioned soul, when he comes in the material sphere, he becomes covered or contaminated by these modes of material nature. He assumes different types of sense organs, different type of mouth, different type of nose, depending on his desires from a previous life. So Krishna is known as Rishikesha. So because he is the master of the senses, he is able to control everyone's senses. We are not known as Rishikesha. Yes, we do have senses, but they themselves have been generated and they have been put into motion by the potency of the Lord. So even at the time of creation, or we could say the gradual process of evolution, which is explained in terms of the controlling deities, the Adideva or the Adibhautika, even the Adiatma, all of these actually have their dependence on the potency of the Lord. So we can actually never supremely act independently. The jiva, the living entity, is always connected to the Supreme Lord. And therefore we depend on him for our very sustenance, whether we're in the material sphere or in the spiritual sphere. So in the later purports, Srila Prabhupada also explains how the how our material senses get created, or how the qualities of sense perceptions are evolutionary. He first explains that, of course, the original cause is the Mahavishnu lying in the coral ocean of the Mahatattva. He explains this very nicely. And he explains how from the different elements, the five gross elements, sky, air, fire, water, and ether, they are attached to certain perceptions. So from sky we get sound, from the air we get sound and touch, from fire we get the previous two including shape, and then from water we get the previous three including form, and then the earth, of course, has all of them including the sense of smell. So all of these have been generated originally at the point where the Mahavishnu lying in the causal ocean, being directed, of course, by the Supreme Lord himself, is generating these senses and sense perceptions from the gross to the subtle. From subtle to gross. So from the very subtle elements of sound to the grossest elements through the earth, where you get all these sense perception. This is all coming in the beginning from the Mahavishnu lying in the Karanajal. So these senses that we see, senses and sense perceptions, they are practical signs of life. Prabhupada explains this in the early chapters of this canto, that as they exist in the Supreme, who is Sachit Ananda Vigraha, they also exist in the living entities, his parts and parcels. So the Supreme Cause cannot be seen as impersonal or without desire. The very fact that we are persons, we have experiences, we have desires, should denote the fact that our origin or our cause has all of these, but in higher magnitude, in higher exemplification. So that is Krishna, because all of that exists in us in minute quantities. They have their origin, all these senses and sense perceptions, they have their totality and their origin in the Supreme Lord. So the Lord in his Virat Purusha, he is conscious of all, or he's conscious of each and every part of his body and creation. Therefore, he's also conscious of each and every living entity and providing for the different types of perceptions and facilitating different types of desires for the living entity. By his all-pervasive nature, in his different expansions, the Supreme Absolute Truth is able to do these things. So because he is Rishikesh, the master of all senses, not only does he master his senses, but also when the living entity connects with him through the process of yoga, the union of trying to reawaken or reestablishing the relationship with the Supreme Lord. When the living entity does that, he can also be master of his senses, in the sense that we become Goswamis, we master our senses and use those senses in Krishna's service. But when we misuse our senses, when we attach our senses to material sound, material form, material taste, our senses take us down and our senses control us. So we become godasa, we become controlled by the senses. So the very element also that we are liable to be controlled by the senses shows us that we're not actually independent. We're not supremely independent. At any minute, we can become controlled by any of the senses because the senses are so strong, especially in this human body. In most species of life, whether it's the fish or the dog, they have one predominant sense that is extremely powerful. The human form, of course, has all senses very, very powerful and very, very strong. Therefore, it is highly recommended the process of bhakti yoga, which is able to engage all types, or able to engage all of our senses in Krishna's service, thereby controlling our actions, changing or transforming our desires so that our desires merge and become one with Krishna's desires. Krishna's desire, of course, is always that the living entity may relate to him as part and parcel, that the relationship can go back to its original state of master and servant. So when we do this, the living entity is able to experience and able to understand that in essence, Krishna indeed is the cause of all causes, whether it be matter or spirit. He is facilitating everything based, of course, on our individual desires, based on our thought perceptions, which are independent. Krishna has given us that ability to independently desire. And based on that type of desire or the type of association we get that influences our desire, we would get pleasure either in chasing the glitz and the glamour of that which is temporary, or we become attracted to Krishna's internal pleasure potency. And that is the only way that this thick covering of the false ego can gradually get removed. Otherwise, this covering, it is very subtle, but it is very thick, and it takes a lot of focus to actually get rid of the false ego concept of life. In the early chapters as well, it is nicely explained by Srila Prabhupada that it is only the process of bhakti yoga that can actually cleanse the heart for good. So all other processes, yes, they do have potency, they do have strength, but specifically in Kali Yuga, the process, and in general, the process of unalloyed bhakti is that which is able to eradicate any other tinge or any other contaminant factor, whether it be jnana or karma or any mystic siddhi, mystic opulences. The process of pure bhakti is able to eradicate that type of contamination. So the adibhautik or the adidevik and the adiatma always depend on one supreme person, and that alone is the supreme independent person, Krishna. Although the living entity at times think himself to be independent, of course, our very ability to do anything, our ability to even see forms or to hear, this is all dependent on the universal vision. This is dependent on the Lord himself who provides or who injects the potency required to use our senses. So we cannot do anything independently. This, however, doesn't mean that we do not act or we're not responsible for our actions. As I mentioned before, we can think independently, but we cannot act independently because we do not own any establishment. We do not even own our own body. That has been provided. We have been dependent. Just as a child is dependent in the womb on the mother for everything. So even for the form, the different organs to be gradually formed, it's explained in the third canto, Movements of the Living Entities, how month by month different parts of the living entity are formed. This is all dependent on the mother's ability to put food inside, for the mother's ability to take care of herself, and that is transformed into the body of the living entity within the womb. So similarly, the living entity in this creation is dependent on the Supreme Lord's potency to be able to not only engage the senses, but to actually to be able to use the senses in a particular way. As they say, there's a, you know, the famous saying, man proposes and God disposes. So we have desires, we have independent thoughts, and the only way those can be established or fulfilled is if the Lord provides the playground for us to actually act out these desires. So we can conclude by saying that all the senses are produced by the Lord's reservoir of senses, and the sensual activities of the material world in their contaminated state are to be purified by the process of devotional service. So this purification should begin at a certain stage where the living entity actually gets disgusted with material existence, gets disgusted with different bodily designations, different coverings of the false ego, gross, subtle, whatever it may be. And in this way, by this constant purification in the heart and purification of the mind, the intelligence and the senses, which is where the lustful propensities sit, when we purify these three areas, we're able to actually understand the supreme tattva of Krishna, and then we also understand what our tattva is. We understand how Krishna is the source of everything that is moving and non-moving, how Krishna is the maintainer, and we are simply dependent on Him at every single step for all our actions, actually. We propose what our desires are, what we would like to do with different types of senses, and it is Krishna's energies that actually provide the ability for us to gain any type of pleasure, whether it's material pleasure or spiritual pleasure. The reservoir of sense pleasure is Krishna. So all these senses, all these different sensations, everything that we get, that is coming from Krishna's energies, directly or indirectly from Krishna. So in this way, when we understand the position of Krishna, we can very easily understand our small position in relationship to Him. So the different explanations given about this whole process of how these senses are generated from the reservoir of all senses of the Supreme Lord Himself in this material domain. When we understand how all of these things are working, we should be humbled at least to understand that actually the only thing that I am doing at this point is desiring, and Krishna is providing an entire atmosphere for me to actually live out these desires, get purified in the process, and perfect my human form of life. So we dictate through our desires to the Supreme Lord, and our movement from one body to another, of course, is determined by our actions. It's determined by our propensity to either want to enjoy and be in this world, or our propensity to want to connect with Krishna once again. So we possess different senses, we possess different abilities to desire separately or with Krishna, and all of these are a result of an individual or the individual's own part to want to be independent. But as a practitioner of the Bhakti Yoga tradition, we understand that our supreme independence, so to speak, lies in being dependent on the Lord, understanding that we are actually dependent on Krishna's energy at any given point of time. So, when Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita was speaking to Arjuna, the most confidential knowledge, he explained that the material nature is also working under his direction. So the matters of creation, you know, that is indirectly, yes, Krishna is working there. He's also directly working there by expanding himself in his Vishnu forms to maintain the different universes, to maintain the living entities, to travel with the living entities from one body to the other, fulfilling their desires and awarding different bodies, different types of senses, different types of nose, different types of ears, based on the desire of the living entity. So Arjuna was also humbled when he heard this very confidential knowledge that actually Krishna speaks that he's controlling also the material energy. And everything that is moving and also non-moving is a direct result of the manifestation of the Lord's potency. So in this way, Arjuna himself kind of came to his senses and he understood the position of Krishna. And right after that, after Krishna explains the verse, Maya Dakshina Prakriti, he goes on to explain how foolish persons who always separate Krishna from any part of his creation, they deride him when he descends into this material world, and they don't know Krishna's transcendental nature. That yes, he is within the material world, but at the same time, he's not touched or affected by it, because the nature of his tattva, that he does not mix with matter at any point. Krishna is always pure. He doesn't mix. He's the supreme cause of all causes, and he always remains aloof from material tinges. So in this way, by understanding even just the creation of these subtle and gross elements, we can get to see how Krishna navigates the lives of the conditioned soul. He also navigates the lives of the liberated souls by taking charge of their senses, because the living entities in his purified state will want to connect with the Supreme Lord through the process of yoga, specifically here, through the process of bhakti yoga, whereas the conditioned soul will want to connect with the Lord through enjoying his external potency and trying to be the Lord and Master of the material energy. So I'll stop there and I'll ask if there's any comments or questions.
Yes. Oh.
Yes,
it is said that Lord Shiva can remove all the yoga.
Mm-hmm.
So how does he do?
How does Lord Shiva remove false
Lord
ego?
False.
Well, Lord Shiva's he's the greatest Vaishnava, so he's working under Krishna's direction. He's performing a service. So the position of Lord Shiva is that he purifies the living entities of any contamination and then he allows them to engage in bhakti yoga. So it is not that Lord Shiva is acting independently. Lord Shiva himself is chanting the names of Ram. That's who Lord Shiva worships. So the potency, even I think, I can't remember which chapter it is, it was explaining how the mystic yogis who are always trying to get the primary cities or the secondary cities, they are worshipping Lord Shiva. However, they do not understand that, you know, Lord Shiva himself states that all these potencies that they're getting is coming from his master, his supreme lord. So whatever potencies that Lord Shiva is getting, whatever potency he has of removing the false ego or the mode of ignorance from people's consciousness, it is the direct mercy of Krishna coming through him. So he has that potency to be able to deliver those who are in the mode of ignorance specifically, because they are tamasic, and he acts as a filter. It is his service to purify them from that mode so that they can make progress towards Krishna. So that is how he removes the false ego, by connecting them to Krishna eventually.
But a lot of people are not worshipping Lord Shiva. So how does he interfere with it?
How does he interfere with what?
Like some people, they don't worship Lord Shiva at all.
Mm-hmm.
So they are devotees of Krishna. So how Lord Shiva is removing their
faulty? So some people are worshipping Lord Shiva, don't worship Lord Shiva, but they're devotees of Lord Krishna.
Yes, sir. Some people don't believe in Lord Shiva.
Mm-hmm.
They are just worshipping Lord Krishna.
Okay.
So how Lord Shiva is removing their faults?
Okay, so for example, Vaishnavas, we do not, well, aspiring Vaishnavas, we do not directly worship Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva himself recommends who we should worship. In his different songs throughout the Bhagavatam, the song sung by Lord Shiva in later cantos explains how he's encouraging living entities to move towards worshipping Vishnu, worshipping Krishna, Prabhupada explains in the purport. So we do not have to indirectly detour to Lord Shiva to access bhakti. By the mercy of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, we've been given a process where we can access Krishna through the manifestations of Gaura Nithai. So those who worship Lord Krishna, it's not that they are being disrespectful to Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva himself recommends that the person to be worshipped is Vishnu or Krishna.
No, my question is, how Lord Shiva is controlling the false ego?
How is he controlling? By Krishna's mercy. Huh? By Krishna's mercy.
No, Lord Shiva.
Yeah, I'm saying he's controlling by Krishna's mercy. As Lord Brahma is saying, he's the second... He's a controlling, you could say he's a controlling deity of that mode. It doesn't mean that he himself gets covered by ignorance, but he's responsible, just like Vayu. We can't say Vayu is always blown away. He's a controlling deity of wind. Surya doesn't get burned to ashes. He's a controlling deity of the sun or fire. Sorry, of the sun. So they are responsible. It is a post. They are responsible for, you could say, controlling to some degree a certain mode. But ultimately, where does that potency come from? Lord Brahma himself is saying, I'm the secondary creator. But all these subtle elements are already being created and manifested by the Lord. And he's given me the intelligence to get all these elements, manipulate them, and create more jivas. So the, you could say the fertile soil or the ground is already provided by Krishna, by the intelligence of the living entity. The living entity takes that and starts transforming and starts acting. And my answer is, he's controlling it by Krishna's mercy. Okay, maybe we can ask Lord Shiva directly. Yeah, so the very fact... Okay, how Lord Shiva comes... Can I speak? So I'm saying the only way Lord Shiva, who is sometimes called Tamasi, right, the only way that he is able to control.
Yes.
Yes.
That's why we want to satisfy the body senses and everything.
Yes.
So therefore the ego is being controlled by Lord Shiva. So how
he is
doing?
How he is doing? How is he controlling our desire to? Well, he's not really controlling the false ego of everybody. He's facilitating us to be in that slumber.
So who is controlling the false ego? Because we are thinking that we are body. We are not thinking that we are soul. We think so, that's no problem.
Okay.
Lord Shiva doesn't mean to.
I don't know what your actual question is. I've said as best as I can. Prana Prabhu, maybe you can highlight something.
I think one thing that you brought up was Rishikesh, the Lord is the master of the senses. It's one of the answers to the question of the heart, that
Universal form. Universal form of Krishna.
And it was said in the last line that he desired to drink it and the mouth opened. And thus the hunger is created.
Hunger and thirst, and when he desired to drink and eat, the mouth opened. Basically, the point that's being made here is that we have all these subtle, we have sense perceptions, we have sense organs. And this creation begins in a very subtle way. So everything, every single subtle perception, subtle form is created in coordination with the sense organs. So as I mentioned earlier on, you know, the earth has all five elements. Sorry, the earth has all smell, touch, form, taste, etc. But that is the end result. That is the that is the grossest form of creation. But if you begin with the ether, which is just sound, and you go down right to the earth, everything is created in connection with the senses and sense perception, sense organs, etc. So the point Srila Prabhupada is trying to show here, even with this example of the living entity in the womb. So because the Lord is the supreme,
Virat entity in the womb means what?
Child in the womb. No, the example, if you read the purport, you'll understand the example Srila Prabhupada gives. That all these sense organs, senses in general, they exist in the body of the Supreme Lord. Here Prabhupada explained it as the Virat Purusha. So because all of these sense perceptions, desires themselves, they come from the Lord, naturally the living entity will also have sense perceptions, sense organs. The living entity also has desires. But it is all coming in its subtle form, eternally, from time immemorial, from Krishna, because he is the origin of all these things. So in this connection, we understand it. That's why it is said the previous chapter, in the previous chapter, there's a chapter called The Cause of All Causes, and it explains a little bit about creation. So for us to have everything that we have, it is also existing in the supreme form of the Lord. All these senses, perceptions, desires, they exist in Krishna, hence we have them too. Well, the Lord, there's pastimes of Krishna having prasadam. That's why we cook and offer Krishna. But it's not the same hunger pangs that drive us crazy in material existence. His is always transcendental. But this goes to show, as Prabhupada mentions, that this always means that the Supreme Absolute Truth is a person, because there are these sense organs, there's perceptions, there's desires. So if he is a Supreme Person, we're also persons, as we can see. So the argument of the impersonalist is false, who say Krishna is without form, without senses, without desires.
But if the impersonalist is arguing this way, that if he is a God, how he is getting hunger? Why he wants to eat? Then how would you explain this?
Well, he is the Supreme Person. Just because you're a Supreme God doesn't mean you don't desire to eat. Where does that desire come? Why do we have that desire? It's coming from Krishna.
But if the argument again boils down to here, just to the God, what kind of God, if he has a hunger like this human beings? No.
He doesn't have hunger like human beings. First of all, Krishna doesn't need to eat with his mouth. He can eat with any of his senses, because he is transcendental. You can say that to them. Lord Brahma explains it in Brahma Samhita. Like, his senses are interchangeable. He can run with his eyes. He can eat with his ears. That's the difference between the Lord's senses and our senses. We need to eat with our mouth. We can't eat with our ears. So because they do not understand the form of Krishna being transcendental, as he says in the Bhagavad Gita, when I descend in my form, fools deride me when I come in my form in this world. They think that it is also tempered by the modes of material nature, but they don't know that it is transcendental. It is supremely transcendental at all times and all spaces. But they will argue it because they want to get rid of the personality. They want to get rid of form. So they think Krishna is always nirguna. There is no senses. But it means there is no material senses in the Supreme Absolute Truth. His senses are spiritual. That's what nirguna means. Not just without material senses. That's the Supreme Lord. Thank you very much. Granthiraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Srila Prabhupada ki. Oh, Kanande.